Hello everybody, and welcome once more to Spotlight. Spotlight is the program where we find out about our For the People members. Just a few things before we start. Please no texting in the room, and save any questions or comments until the end of the interview, and then you can ask our guest questions. Well, today I'd very much like to welcome someone to Spotlight who's a regular visitor to For the People. It's Carl DeValconier. Carl, welcome to Spotlight. Thanks for agreeing to be interviewed. And can I begin by asking you where and when you were born?
Yes, you may, Steve. I was born in February of 1936 on the 21st day in a little town called Joffre, which was in Washington County, nearby where Jock was born. But he was born in Washington. I was born in Washington County.
And you're now a resident of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, but we'll come on to how you got there a little bit later on. Now, I'm fascinated by your name, Carl DeValconier. That sounds to me as if it's probably European. Where's it from?
That is the surname of my father, who was born in Belgium. He came over here in 1912 and a few years later married my mother, and she was Scots-Irish. So I was born over here in America.
Can you tell us a little bit about your parents, what they actually did? What did your dad do for a living?
My father was a coal miner. Back then, that's in that area, that's about all there was, exclusive the steel mills. When the war came about, Second World War, my mother went to work in a restaurant. She was a cook in a restaurant. Other than that, she was a stay-at-home mom.
And did you have brothers and sisters, or are you the only one?
I am 67. I have a brother 5 years older than me, and that was it. Just the two of us, my brother Alfred and myself.
I'd like to find out a little bit about your early experiences, Carl. Tell us a little bit about your early memories of your childhood. What sort of a childhood did you have?
Well, I was a typical little boy. We had a front porch that had dirt under it, and I went under the porch and played in the dirt. And I can remember the Second World War when it came about, and the other things that came along with it. There were a couple kids that I grew up with that their property adjoined ours. Other than that, it was either with my brother or the two kids that I grew up with.
And what sort of things did you used to get up to when you were a child? Did you mess around like other kids? Were you able to play out, and was it a happy childhood?
Yes, we went up and played in the woods, and there was a great big slate dump up there, and we went to the top and jumped off of the top, and as far as we could jump and landed in our heels on the sleigh dump to see how far out we could jump. In the winter time, we used to sled ride down the actual face of the sleigh dump, and down at the bottom there was a very narrow path, and you could cut up that path, and if you didn't cut up that path, you went right into a creek, and you got soaking wet.
And I bet you did it on more than one occasion. It sounds, from what you say, as if you had a very enjoyable childhood. Tell me about the time when it was time for you to actually start to attend school.
Well, first I went to Bible school, which now is kindergarten. Then I went to grade school, and I became sick. And I missed 6 months out of the 9 months of school. However, when I took my final test, I passed, and I was able to go to second grade, but I wasn't permitted by the teacher to go into second grade because she didn't feel that I was able to, you might say, hack it, going into second grade, and no matter what my parents said or the principal said, she wouldn't accept me, and that was that. And I, shall we say, failed first grade, and I did it over again. But as I look back on it, she did me one of the biggest favors that was ever given to me in my life, repeating first grade.
You said you became sick. Does this mean that you developed some serious illness, Carl? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I did get different things that children get, but then I got the German measles, and from that they think that I developed epilepsy, and I was ill a lot from that, not being able to go to school and not being able to, shall we say, pay attention in class, because they were trying to get my medicine straightened out. I even went so far as to go to a doctor in West Virginia, and he was giving me herbs, and you talk about raw stuff to drink. Boy, that was raw, and didn't do me any good. But then I eventually went to our family doctor.
We're probably talking about, what, the early 1940s by now. I suppose that the treatment for epilepsy back then is nothing in comparison to what it is today. Did it take a long time to stabilize you? And in fact, were you stabilized? Did the fits cease, you know, with the help of medication?
Yes, it was stabilized, but it took a good while. I went into Children's Hospital, and a doctor up there gave me a test off the top of my head, I can't think of it. They wire your head up to see if you're taking what they call petimols, and then they put a strobe light over your eyes, and your eyes are closed, and the strobe light going off and on actually made you have convulsions that they were able to have on paper, like when you get a when you have your heart done to see how good your heart is working. That was whenever they were able to really pinpoint it.
And how serious were your fits? Did you have bad seizures or just little absences?
Well, back then they were called petimols or grand mals. Petimol is a small one, or an absence of you might say an absence of what's going on around you. A grand mal is when you would actually fall down on the ground and or floor, and that was the bad one. You could lose your control of your body functions. There was no there was nothing they could really do for you when you were in a grand mal, except control your head and your limbs. And just wait for the time to go by. And that was that.
Now, I'd like to ask you, Carl, it may be a bit painful for you to answer this one, but I hope you'll forgive me. What was the attitude of other people, especially your peers at school, when this happened to you? How did they react?
Well, the one word you used was one I had to get used to, and that was fits, nitwit, crazy. The reason you're like that is because your dad and mother bore you out of wedlock. It was awful hard, and then finally I just realized that if you can't beat them, join them. You know, like when someone says, oh, my wife will have a fit if I forgot to get the milk. Well, those words were awful, harsh, and demeaning to me, and I didn't want to hear them, and people could see the look on my face. So I just started using the words, and finally they didn't bother me anymore.
Well, let's hope that now the attitude has changed. I don't know whether it has or not. Maybe you'd like to comment on now whether people still have those awful prejudices that I know people who have epilepsy have suffered in past times. Would you say, I know we're jumping forward now, but I'll just ask you while I think about it, would you say now as an adult that people's understanding has changed and improved over the last 40, 50 years?
Not very much, Dave. Not much. it's still out of ignorance. Nobody wants to hear anything about it. When I say nobody, I mean the general public. They quote the Bible as saying, you have demons in you. Even back when I got married in 58, there were some states that were not allowed to get married. And there were some states that they were even sterilizing women that had epilepsy.
That's truly horrendous, Carl. That's really, really dreadful. I hope that things have changed, but maybe one day, it will change. You know, people's attitude to all forms of disability. And let's hope that day comes sooner than later. Okay, just let's jump back now then, Carl, to your school days. And you did say earlier on in our interview that you were held back and you had to take one of your grades again. What actually happened when you moved on to the second part of your education? Tell us a little bit about that.
You mean up in the high school?
Yeah, up in the high school. What, had you got any plans for what you wanted to do? Because we haven't actually mentioned the fact, it's a bit remiss of me, I forgot to mention the fact that you're a little bit unusual on Fuller People in the respect that you are a fully sighted member of Fuller People. You don't have a visual problem. I was just wondering what sort of plans you got for your future in your high school days.
Well, my plans were to go in the coal mine with my father. But just when I was about ready to get out of high school, the coal mines petered out. There were no more jobs in a coal mine. So then I thought, well, I'll work in a mill, and steel mill. So I went to work, and when my doctor found out that I was working in a steel mill, three shifts, daylight, second shift, and midnight, I got a new set of eardrums and was told to get out of there because that was no good for me. And I got out and I went to business school. And business school, I got a job with the Pennsylvania Railroad, now defunct.
Just let me take you back to the short period you worked in the steel mill. I've no conception at all what a steel mill is actually like. So perhaps you could just spend a brief time telling us what your job was in the steel mill and what sort of things were produced there, Carl.
Well, I worked in a wire mill, and there were hot wires coming through the furnaces, rolling onto big spools. And when each spool would get full, it was my job to cut the wire on that spool, take that wire off, and put a new spool on, and start all over again. Maybe I had six or eight spools that I had to be in charge of. Number one, it was dangerous because it was hot wire. True, when I cut it it wasn't that hot, but that spool was moving around and around. So, you know, that was no place for someone with a condition like mine to be working. On top of that, it was three different shifts. So that wasn't a good deal either.
You say it was wire that you were manufacturing. What was the end product for the wire? Was it electrical wiring or wire used in other industries?
Be like a mesh wire fence. If you've never seen it, can you visualize it?
I think so, Carl. Yeah, I think I know the sort of thing you mean. But thanks for that, because I've no idea, you know, about a steel mill. So that's very interesting. So you moved on after leaving the steel mill, after working there for a very short period, and you said you went to business school. What sort of things did you learn there?
I learned to operate different business machines to be able to go out and get a job in an office, to have a white-collar job.
And after leaving there, was it a hard job to find a job? You know, was it relatively easy, or did you struggle to be employed because of your problem with epilepsy?
Well, actually, it was and it wasn't hard. The teacher I had, were going together after school, and she saw to it that I had an interview at the railroad, and I went up there and saw the gentleman, and he said, go get a physical, and I had to fill out papers, and again, it said, does anybody in your family have epilepsy? My grandmother, my mother, all the way down, you know. And the final line was, lying is grounds for dismissal. Well, naturally, I lied all the way down. And I got the job, and I worked there for 20-some-odd years.
Okay. And what was your job at the railroad? Was that Pennsylvania Railroad, Carl?
Yes, first it was Pennsylvania Railroad. Then they merged with New York Central. Then it became what was known as CON, CONRAIL, Conrail. And I started in Pittsburgh, then I was shipped to Cleveland, Ohio. I worked 4 years down there, bought a home, and then I got shipped back to Pittsburgh, and that's when Conrail owned it. And when I got shipped back to Pittsburgh, I was told, you know, either be there on Monday or no job. So I put my house up for sale in Cleveland, and then came back to Pittsburgh and sold my house through the mail. Then bought a house here in Pittsburgh, and I've been here since.
And what was your job with the railroad?
Well, the first job I was given was a statistician. We had to count the cars that carried whatever. like if they carried coal, if they carried coke, what kind of car it was, how many miles they went with said contents, and so it was a statistician.
So you were dealing mainly with freight of all different types. Were you involved with passengers at all at that stage? You know, fare-paying members of the general public, or was it purely freight you were dealing with?
It was purely freight, and it was on paper. I wasn't with the public at all. I was in an office.
And you did that for a certain period, did you? And I think you told me on our little chat we had before we did Spotlight that you had a couple of jobs, well, three jobs. So what came next after after that job?
I became a timekeeper. And in railroads, you can either bid on a job or you get bumped off that job with someone that has more seniority. So there was a job put up for bid as a timekeeper, so I bid on that job to be a timekeeper, and that's what I did there for some time.
And would you like to explain to us what your duties were as a timekeeper? Of keeping time, I suppose, but in what aspect were you a timekeeper?
Well, you know, you have your ingoing, outgoing mail. Well, I would always get mail along with my other people I worked with, and I had the Pittsburgh division that I had to work with, and I always had to make sure that the men that were on vacation got paid, because if they were on vacation, their time cards weren't coming in. They got paid according to how much money they made last year and according to their position on the railroad, and I had to fill out slip after slip with their number on it, their work number, and send it over to the IBM department to make sure that they got a check cut for them. On top of that, I would have a guy come in and say, "I'm going to check my time." So you're doing all this, and a guy comes in, he wants to check his time. Maybe he's short. Maybe he got paid too much, depending upon whatever it may be. And he had to do all that. And when I took a vacation day, my mail just piled up. The only thing that any of the people I worked with ever did for me, and we did for them, was make sure that these men got paid according to what amount of vacation pay they wanted to take and how many days.
So really, you were quite an important man in the eyes of the employers, because you were calculating really how much they should have been paid in wages. Is that a pretty fair comment?
Yes, and the stickler of it was, when you had some guys coming in that wanted paid whenever short, and you were doing all this other work, they wanted paid, you had to take time out to check their time and you had a deadline to meet for the other men that wanted to take their vacation to get that over to the IBM department.
So you did this timekeeping job for a period, and what happened after that, Carl? What was your next job with the railroad?
Well, I went to school again for the larger IBM machines. They were called the auxiliary machines, not to be confused with the computers. That's when the computers were coming into vogue, and they were about as big as a refrigerator. And then they were in their own separate room, and there was mist sprayed in there to keep it damp.
Just a little bit different to the PCs we're using today then, Carl, you could say. My goodness, what a prospect. So, what was your job there? What did you actually do with these huge machines?
Well, they were more or less reproduction jobs that could be done in mass. Instead of taking up the computer time, these were done in mass on the auxiliary machines.
Yeah, as I say, very, very different computers to what we're using today. And can't imagine them that size and working in that way. So you were merrily working in the IBM department of the railroad company. What was the next major thing that actually happened to you in your life, Carl?
Well, I did a lot of things after going home from work. I would work just like a mom, just like a, I'm searching for a word. I would work just like a bricklayer. I helped build a house. I helped cut grass. I did a lot of things. What happened to me that I think you're alluding to is that I was cutting my own grass and I fell. And when I fell, the pain was very bad and I had to go to the hospital. I was in traction. Then they dismissed me from the hospital and I came home. And I was in bed, in traction, and then had to go back to the hospital. And then that was whenever I went on retired disability.
So did they ever come to any conclusion as to what was the problem? Did they give you a diagnosis of what had happened to you?
Well, back then, you have to realize they didn't have all the fancy machines that they have today. They didn't have the MRI, which more or less tell you point blank what's wrong. But they were telling me that I have degenerating cerebellum. I couldn't walk good. I couldn't run my heel up and down my shin bone without it going left or right and onto the bed.
So, how old were you at this stage, Carl? You'd been working. I take it you were married by this time. Which year are we up to now?
1978. I was 41 years old.
And you were married by then. Let's just find out a little bit about about your personal life. You did say you were married in 1958, earlier on in the interview. Tell us a little bit about how you met your wife.
Well, when I walked in the office to see if I could have the job, there were a few young girls in there, and I don't want to say this to sound cute, but there were some single girls in there, and a couple of them said, "He's mine, he's mine." And I got the job, and when I got the job, I sat across a double desk from my now wife.
Well, that's incredible. What's your wife's name, Carl?
Rosemary.
You're married in 1958, and again, I'm going to ask you a very personal question, Carl, but I hope you'll forgive me, and if you don't want to answer that, that's fine. Because of your problem with epilepsy, did you think long and hard about having children, and in fact, did you have children?
Well, long and hard about it, and finally, I asked my doctor, I says, what do you think about having one child? He says, well, with the information that's come out now, go ahead and have one. I don't think there's anything wrong.
So the decision was made to have a child. And how worried were you during the pregnancy that maybe the child would have epilepsy?
Personally, myself, none.
And I take it that, was it a boy or a girl? I take it that the child is fine.
A daughter, 42 years old. She's fine. And later on, 4 years later, I said to the doctor, anything new about another child? He said, they have more information. You want another one? Go for another one. But he says, I would have another one, then I would call it quits. And we had a boy.
That's a very nice ending to the story of your children, Carl. That's great that, you know, you took the risk and they were both fine. Now you're not working. How have you managed to occupy yourself in these years since you had to give up your job with the railroad company?
Well, believe it or not, Steve, I have found it. I used to go to the gym 3 days a week. I used to go to a senior center the remaining 3 hours of the same 3 days. So I went to the gym 3 days a week and to the center, 3 days a week. And I got my son-in-law to build me a computer. And that's how I've occupied my time. I've read. And I was always busy.
I think that's the secret, isn't it? To keep yourself busy and to keep your brain active. What sort of things did you do at the centre you attended? What sort of activities could you do? You know, what was on offer?
I did ceramics. Painted them. I played pool. I painted sweatshirts and t-shirts. There were many different things to do. There was wood carving. I didn't care for wood carving. It just didn't seem to hit my fancy. I didn't play cards because I didn't care for it. I would say in the past 3 years, they got 5 computers up there that anybody can use. So, and I went to computer school at the high school 3 different times, taught by the computer teacher at the high school. So I've always been busy. In fact, my wife kind of says, "Carl, let's just cool it today, okay?"
Yeah, you told us a little while ago, Carl, a few minutes back, that you asked your son-in-law to build you a computer. You'd obviously had a bit of experience with computers in your work. What was your aim? What did you plan to do with this computer that you asked your son-in-law to build for you?
Not to give you a short answer, learn how to use it. So, each time there was something new on the computer horizon, he would say, "Want another one?" And he would build me another one. There was Windows 96, 98, Millennium, and now I have XP.
When you first got your computer, though, what sort of things were you interested in doing with it?
Well, truthfully, the fascination were the games on it and sending email. And I branched out from there.
And eventually, as we all know, which is pretty obvious, you discovered For the People. Now, I said earlier on that you're a fully sighted person. How did you find out about For the People?
An individual came on here a couple times, Vicky from Australia.
So she introduced you, did she?
She did. We used to text chat a lot. And when she told me that you could just sit and talk, I thought, "Hey man, that's better than typing."
I think we'd all agree with that, Carl. Too much like hard work, all that keyboard activity, isn't it, when you can just key up and speak like we're talking now. But I'm fascinated to know, with all sighted members of For the People, and we've got a few, not many, but we've got a few, and of course they're very, very welcome, and they play a great part in our community. But what makes a fully sighted person want to join an organisation which is primarily for people with a visual handicap. What's the attraction?
Well, when I found out that I was welcome and that nobody had any bones to pick about me coming on, Steve, I'm like this. I'm no better than anybody else, and no one else is any better than me. So I think I know how to get along with people, and then I felt so welcome. So why not?
Absolutely, why not? It's a great pleasure to have you here, Carl, and it's a great pleasure to speak to everyone on here, sighted or not. Now, for my benefit, because I'm over here in the UK, can you tell me a little bit about the area in which you live now? Tell me a little bit about Pittsburgh itself.
Well, Pittsburgh used to be a coal mining steel company. Now it's lost both of them. There are more or less businesses now. There are there's a football stadium here. There's a baseball stadium. There used to be one stadium that was for both baseball and football, but they imploded it and built a baseball and football.
That's a pretty sporty type of place. Is it a large city, as American standards go? Is it a big place?
Yes, it is, and to be honest with you, I don't know the amount of people that are in Pittsburgh. Maybe I should be ashamed to say that, but I'm just telling you the truth.
That's no problem, Carl. Do you enjoy living there? Is it the sort of place you feel good about living in, or would you like to retire to Florida into the sunshine, or are you happy where you are?
I'm happy here now, but upon leaving Cleveland, which I was glad to leave there, it's cold there and the people are cold. Cold as you know what. I'm happy here because at 67, at my stage of the game, and I truthfully think the mountains protect us here. So I guess I'd be happy staying here. I wasn't really originally. I'd like to go back home.
I'm pleased that you're feeling settled these days, Carl. Before we finish, is there anything else about your life or your experiences or any anecdote you'd like to share with us?
Well, now there's a couple little things. As a kid, we used to go up in the woods. I mentioned that a while ago. And we used to cut small saplings off of a tree and get little apples and put a point on that stick, that sapling, and then we would go up on the slate dump and we would whale those little apples as far as we could, as far as the eye could see. We used to get a fork of a young tree and make our own slingshots and shoot at bottles or cans in the creek, which I enjoyed. Also, we used to sled ride. And we used to be rather daring and go and grab the bumper of a car and let the car pull us. Or go up this great big hill and come down it with our feet up on the handlebars and our hands behind our head. So, as a kid, I think I lived a rather good life, Steve, and everyone.
It sure sounds as if you did, Carl, and sounds as if you had a really interesting and enjoyable childhood and life, in fact. Carl, can I thank you very much indeed for agreeing to be interviewed on Spotlight. Final comment, I'd just like to thank Dennis for recording it, and I'd like to thank Becky for coordinating it. If it's agreeable to you, Carl, if there are any questions that people in the room may like to ask you, they can now put them to Carl. Thanks, Carl, and well done. I really enjoyed talking to you.
You're welcome, Steve. I enjoyed it.
Carl, I just want to thank you for being such a great part of For the People. You've made a lot of friends here. And as you found out when you broke your hip year or so back, you got a lot of people really care about you. I was wondering, how many grandchildren do you have now?
Jennifer, let me think. 3, 5... In August it'll be 7.
Lucky 7. I also was a few minutes late getting in. I had computer problems, but today's your wedding anniversary, is that right?
I made a mistake. No, tomorrow's the wedding anniversary.
Well, happy anniversary. Carl, I was hearing about all the fun things you did growing up. Sound like you had an active and pretty daredevil childhood, too. I'm glad you survived it. But I know with the epilepsy, as many of us with our own disabilities, some of us are blind and some of us have physical disabilities, it can be very isolating. Did you find that to be true with your epilepsy?
I did, except for the two kids and my brother that I grew up with. And when I finally figured, to hell with it, I wasn't isolated because, I'll tell you one more. I used to go swimming and dive off a 10-foot board and swim underwater an awful lot.
Carl, this is Lee. Did you have a grand mal, a petite mal?
I've had both, Lee. I've had both, but mostly mine are petit mals. But if you have a lot of petit mals, they go into grand mals.
That's the kind I used to have. I'm still taking Peanut Barbastel, and Dial Lantern.
Well, good for you to be on that little bit of medicine.
Carl, you told me one time that your dad used to sing with Perry Como. Did you ever get to meet Perry yourself?
I never did, Jock, no.
What do you consider the single most greatest accomplishment in your life thus far, Carl?
Marrying my wife.
You know, I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, Carl, a very happy anniversary to you and Rosemary for tomorrow.
That goes for me too, my buddy.
Thanks.
So, Carl, I guess this is your 45th wedding anniversary. Do I have my math right?
Wow. 44, isn't it?
You better find out before tomorrow. You'll be in hot water, mister.
Sorry, Carl. I didn't mean to get you in a jam. Is your wife standing there?
No, she's not here. She had to go to the doctor's.
It's a good job she's not there, Carl, if you can't remember how many years you're married.
I'll have to figure that. You know, it's been a joke between her and I as to how many years. And, it's been a joke about numbers with her and I. And that's why, in all honesty, I'm not sure.
Well, if my math is correct, then you were married in 58. This is 2003. That adds up to 45 to me.
I'll take your word for it, Jock.
Well, thank you, Steve and Carl, for a great interview, and thank you, Dennis, for recording as always, and to Becky for her wonderful job of coordinating Spotlight.